SMQBs, this is episode Charles Barkley, Walter Sweetness Payton, and Lenny Bias. That's right, episode 34, NFL week 3 coverage. We finally got a pick right between the five of us. We got to talk a little Ryder Cup action, MLB postseason, perhaps one of the greatest hitting runs that Major League Baseball has ever seen. And of course, punchable face of the week and a really, really deserving Ted Lasso moment. Check it out. Leave us 5-star review. Have fun. Enjoy the episode. Thanks.
Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. From Dallas, Texas, Ryan Pope. Michael Rooster Phelan from Richmond, Virginia. Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa. Toby House Milrod from Philadelphia. Chris Bison Nace from D.C.
SMQBs, this is your Charles Barkley, your Walter Payton, and your, yes, Len Bias episode. This is SMQBs episode 34. House, what is the best part about your team playing on Monday night?
That we don't have to talk about whether or not they lost at the time of the podcast.
That is exactly it. By the time we record again, no one here will remember how bad Jalen Hurts played. So you are off the hook. That is the best thing. You are so lucky. All right, House, NFL week 3. What the hell is going on in the NFL?
Yo, let me tell you something. There are some crazy. We talked about week 2 about upside down. There are some really weird upside down records. Look, Denver has played nobody yet, but Denver is 3-0. The Chiefs are 1-2.
Two of those games are the Giants and the Jets. Let's keep that in mind.
That's true. And I think the other one might be Jacksonville or something like that.
Yeah. But there, yes, that's it was Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, that's who's on the schedule. But the NFL week 3 did not disappoint. I think we're starting to see a little bit about the cream rising to the top, the crap going to the bottom. I would say that NBC Sunday Night Football has some franchise on its hands. If you guys did not see the end of the Green Bay San Francisco game, holy mackerel, what a performance by Aaron Rodgers. 37 seconds, they get the ball back and overcome a really great played game by Jimmy G. The Rams served notice over Tampa Bay that this thing is not a cakewalk for you. Yeah, you should be nervous, Milk.
No, I'm nervous.
He's fine. That's why he doesn't have any video on.
Milk called that game. It's the only thing he's gotten right in a while.
The Vikings could very well be 3-0, have lost two very close games, and then really put the beat down on Seattle. I think Rooster's very favorite quarterback of the moment, Justin Herbert, and the Chargers really showed up the Chiefs.
I love Justin Herbert.
Yeah, you do. The Browns have a suffocating defense that demolished the Bears. The vaunted Washington football team defense has some serious problems.
Fire Lock Del of the Rio. Week. Fire Lock Del of Rio. The week.
Serious problems. We won't even talk about any team that plays football in New York. The Jets and Giants can just get on a ship and leave this country because they are. New York should be furious. That whole city, if you like football, professional football, and you're in New York, you should be furious.
John Mara got booed at halftime when he was introducing Eli Manning.
I thought the Falcons were great, though. I mean,
they need to fire Jason Garrett immediately. Because remember, House, what you said that the Giants need to do offensively after game two?
They did not
run the quarterback run option at all against the Falcons. The guy has the least imagination when calling.
Isn't the first problem just having Jason Garrett as a coach?
Yeah, he needs to go. He needs to go immediately. He should be fired tomorrow. Go ahead. Wow. Sorry to interrupt.
I mean, it's bad. Kyler Murray is for real. I mean, the team was down 19-10 late in the third quarter, and he just zoop. I mean, the defense showed up too, but Arizona's good. The Titans, pretty much are showing that division they're back in charge. Derrick Henry's a beast. And I don't know, Milk, you might have written off Jameis just a little too quickly again.
Oh, really?
Jameis and the Saints, 28-13 over New England.
Jameis Winston did nothing in that game. He threw for 128 yards. His defense won that game for him.
The defense had 18 quarters.
He threw a ball into the end zone. He wasn't even looking. He was getting sacked. Typical Jameis throw. Should have been picked. He got a lucky TD. It was very annoying.
The Saints D is really good. They had 18 quarterback pressures in that game. And I'm not sure that Mac Jones is ready for primetime after all. But it was an exciting week. The biggest thing of the week, guys, what was the biggest thing of the whole week?
Flash Gordon is going to the kick.
Justin Tucker.
That was unbelievable.
The kick was amazing.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
66 yards. He took a little hop before he launched it.
It was unbelievable for Justin Tucker, but it was also unbelievable that it was Detroit. Like, yeah, that is just something that happens to Detroit. There's just no words.
The Ravens should be 1-2. I mean, that's who would have predicted that?
They showed it last night on Sunday Night Football that Tom Dempsey over the Lions with a record setter for the Saints. Then Justin Tucker tied the record over the Lions. And then Justin Tucker comes back and breaks his own record over the Lions. 66 yards. That is unbelievable.
Well, listen, the Lions play a very important place in the NFL every year. They make guys like me and Rooster and you, House, not feel so bad about our dismal teams year after year. It's
videos of the kick from the stands. It's almost like the reaction from the Lions fans. It's almost acceptance at this point.
I'm just pissed that the Lions may get the first pick instead of the Giants.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you guys about. I mean, truly, I know we're focusing like on who's going to maybe make the playoffs, who's the team to beat this year, but already there's some 0-3 teams that the season is pretty much over. Of these 0-3 teams, do any of them have a hope that one day it's going to turn around? Is Jacksonville or the Jets or the Giants, are these teams capable of turning it around?
Well, of those three, you got to think the Giants have the least hope, because at least Jacksonville and the Jets have brand new young quarterbacks. I mean, the brand new young quarterback that the Giants have, Danny Dimes, is at best serviceable. I mean, at best, he belongs as a starter in the NFL. That's probably the best you're going to get from him. At least the other two teams have a little hope that they could have the next Mahomes on their hands.
Giants have two of the first 10 draft picks this coming draft. I think they're going to.
Well, how'd they do in the draft last year?
Well, they're going to get rid of Gettleman for sure.
I think the Jets are in the worst situation, because I think unless something changes dramatically, he could be a massive bust.
Yep.
But after week one, we were all saying he looked really good in week one. So, I mean, you know, he's a young guy. If he can play like he did in week one, then he's going to be a massive.
Yeah, it is three games. You
know, yeah.
I think the Jaguars are in the best situation.
It is three games.
Urban Meyer being their coach, and he'll certainly quit maybe in midseason this year.
So we have.
I was going to ask that.
Oh, yeah.
He'll stick us out, right?
We have heart issues that come up around week 10. Right.
We have five undefeated teams: the Raiders, Broncos, Panthers, Rams, and Cardinals. Of those, does anyone think that beyond the Rams and the Cardinals, those are legit teams that are going to go far in the playoffs? Hey,
same again.
Raiders, Broncos, Panthers, Rams, and Cardinals are all undefeated.
I think the Rams are only the legit team.
Well, the Cardinals look pretty good. In fact, the two highest scoring teams after 3 weeks at 103 points are the Cardinals and who else? Who do you think?
Cardinals.
Well, probably Buffalo. Bills? Buffalo, after getting 43 yesterday.
the Bucks. That shows you how bad your defense is, Milk.
It's bad.
The Bucks and the Cardinals have scored the most points this year after three games.
Yeah.
But the teams that have lost a game that look really good to me are, like you say, the Bills and the Chargers, maybe the Titans. And who knows, the Bucks could pull it together with their defense.
Well, the Chargers should be 3-0.
The Chargers are a really good 2-1 team. Yeah,
I know I was laughed at last week because this was my lock of the week and people laughed at me. Look who's laughing now. But nobody's talking about the Panthers. I'm telling you, they're 3-0.
Milk, really I'm laughing hard at you because I'm remembering you saying that the Steelers are back and Big Ben is a rejuvenated quarterback. They're horrible. Like I said, they're horrible.
Well, you wish Pope was here to talk about how Najee Harris was going to save the whole franchise, right?
Yeah.
How's that working out?
I will say that I agree with Milk that the Panthers actually look pretty decent. I think the Sam Darnold change of scenery has worked out for him. I was impressed how they played without McCaffrey. They still have a good defense. I don't think of those teams, the Panthers and the Raiders, are going to go deep, but I think they both have a shot at making the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the Raiders too. They're pretty resilient. I think the Broncos are going to fade once they hit a hard part of their schedule.
Oh yeah,
I think resiliency is really important in the NFL. There's no question about it. But they, by the hair of their chinny chin chin, beat the Dolphins, who were playing with who was their quarterback yesterday?
Jacoby Brissett.
Gator, baby.
I'm not sure that that was not a good performance for them necessarily.
What's going on with the Chiefs defense? I mean, they're 1-2 for a reason. It's not like they're not scoring points. They're scoring a lot of points.
Give up these huge amounts of points early in the game, and then they're always coming back late.
Guys, it's been a while since I played college football. You guys remember
right?
College football.
I remember you at Penn State, man.
Yeah.
Is that electric football?
Yeah.
God, you're good.
Can you guys explain to me what the hell goes wrong with these teams in the last minute on their defense? Why nobody can play, just buckle down and play defense? Why do these offenses have such an advantage in the last
prevent
minute?
Prevent defense
game?
Schemes never, I think they rarely work. They're really bad.
Prevent you from winning.
Yeah, it's like you've played aggressively the whole game. You've locked down the other team. And now the coach says, all right, everyone lay back and let them catch balls in front of you. Well, that's just one missed tackle away from a touchdown.
The Raiders, Miami game and the Green Bay San Francisco game, both those teams, it was like all of a sudden in the last minute, it was a track meet by the offenses against both defenses. It was really amazing. I don't understand
The other question is, you know, some of the throws and some of the plays that they call and they make, right? Like the throw that Rodgers made down to the 50-yard line. I mean, first of all, he's about the only guy, maybe one of three guys in the NFL who could make that throw. But if it's the first quarter of the game and it's 0-0 or 7-0 or something like that, is he taking that chance and throwing that ball? Maybe Rodgers does, but I wonder if that's part of it too, that the offenses loosen up a little bit and just go for it.
Yeah.
Maybe they need to do that more often.
I'll tell you.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the mastery of that play, that series by Rodgers. I mean, these defenses are trying to take away the sideline pass so you can't stop the clock. But Aaron Rodgers knows exactly how long it takes to make that throw, even though it's in the middle of the field, get up to the line. He did it twice in a row with 37 seconds, backed up to pretty much his own goal line and still got off a winning field goal using the middle of the field. Incredible. No timeouts.
If you were Kyle Shanahan, would you start Trey Smith week 4? Because Jimmy Garoppolo – it isn't
Trey Lance. Going to
get
Trey Lance. Yeah. Jimmy Garoppolo is not a pro, you know, Super Bowl winning quarterback.
He had a nice game last night. Not Super Bowl winning. He had a nice game last night.
I don't know. He takes too many sacks. He's overthrows a lot of guys. He doesn't hit him in stride. Like, he'll complete a 15-yard pass that could have been a 40-yard pass if he led the guy into a running catch.
He actually kind of had. I guess he didn't have that great a game.
I think it's a tough call with these guys. I was watching Rex Ryan, who, you know, I don't really take much of what he says for that much, but he was talking about the Bears needing to play Fields, right? Like, you're not showing any confidence in the young quarterback. He's supposed to be a franchise guy. I don't know. I think I don't have a problem with sitting these guys. You've made a big investment in them. I mean, I watched a lot of talented quarterbacks come to Washington and just get crushed for a season because the offense was no good. The offensive line wasn't ready to protect them, whatever. And, you know, I mean, listen, Derek Carr, what was his brother? David Carr.
Yeah, right? he was a talented guy who got destroyed.
He just got his career ruined because, you know, you can only get hit by 400-pound guys so many times before you get happy feet in the pocket, right? So you'd like to see Lance play because he is a talent, but I don't know. If you play the long ball here, is it so bad to let him sit back and watch? Because Garoppolo is obviously more than serviceable.
I think it's best to let him sit back. I think you have to have it very special upstairs to go through a 2-15 season and be able to come back and be good the next year. It will mess with your head. And a lot of these guys are going to have that. Zach Wilson might not have maybe one or two wins for the Jets. The same with Mac Jones. You know, I think you can learn a lot holding that clipboard.
I think Trey Lance, to me, looks like the best of the five so far. They're already putting him in the red zone, and the defense doesn't know what to do.
But he's also on the best team, though.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So. The Bears' offensive line is horrendous. It's worse than the Giants.
Yeah. I think that Trevor Lawrence is playing pretty well, too, though. I mean, he's kind of getting better every game, if you haven't noticed. I mean, they were winning that game yesterday at end of the third quarter.
It's true.
And then, of course, Kyler Murray came back. But
hey, Milk, your Bucks had won 9 straight until yesterday.
Yeah.
How did it feel when DeSean Jackson tied the NFL record for a greater than 75-yard touchdowns? You guys will remember, certainly Russo will remember, Lance Allworth.
Oh, God. Yeah.
9 75-yard-plus touchdowns. How did that feel when D-Jack scored on his old team, Milk?
Oh, God. You guys have been through this. Isn't it just horrible when D-Jack scores on you? I just hate that guy.
I think he did it to us too after we had him. He went back to the Eagles.
Went and scored from the Bucks on you.
I think, Chris, you and I were walking out of a game watching the end of maybe the Eagles Giants game, and D-Jax returned a kick for a touchdown to win the game in the closing seconds. When was that?
Yeah.
It's one of the greatest Eagles kids of all time.
Oh, God. Game was in the bag, just like this Sunday when Adoree Jackson dropped an interception right in his hands. Game was in the bag, and we blew it.
Let's do our Paul Krause takeaways. What's your takeaway from week 3?
Well, my takeaway is it's really hard to repeat as a Super Bowl champion or even as a Super Bowl finalist. And I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Kansas City Chiefs are going to have a bullseye on their chest all year long, and it's going to be a tough road to get back where they were. Yes, it's early, but the Bucs defense has got problems. The Chiefs have all kinds of problems, and I don't think they're the runaway favorites anymore.
Wow. Milk, one loss and he's burying you. What's your takeaway?
I mean, jeez. Hey, doubt Tom Brady.
Should cut Tom Brady right now.
Yeah, Tom Brady. I will say there were two guys on the field yesterday that I think were Allstate insurance agents last week. So I didn't even know who they were. We were down to like our practice squad dudes, but I'm not making excuses. They kicked our ass.
My takeaway is,
you know, we were really high on Mac Jones, and I think just got to keep things in perspective, and rookies always come back to being rookies. He threw 3 interceptions yesterday. He had a 50.3 QBR rating. And he made Jameis Winston look like a all-star quarterback, even though he threw for 128 yards and had a 68% QBR. But, you know, it just, you got to keep things slow with these guys, keep it in perspective. Not that I'm not salivating after that performance. Bucks at Saints or at New England next Sunday night. So we'll see.
Nobody's going to be watching that. Okay, Rooster, what's your takeaway?
All right. Two takeaways. One is specially for Milk. Number one, the Steelers suck. after three games, they've scored 50 points in three games. The number two is there are new sheriffs in town with some really great, relatively young quarterbacks. Not including Matthew Stafford, who's no longer young, but man, on this new team on the Rams, they look really good. I really was looking forward to watching him play on a good team, and he's doing really well. The Cardinals are, I think, taking a huge step forward this year, as are the Bills and the Chargers with their young quarterbacks. There's some exciting teams out there to watch. In addition to the Bucks and the Chiefs, I think it's going to be a fun year all the way around.
Well, there's a lot of love in the SMQBs today, because my takeaway is along those lines and along how's yours. I mean, the Rams have served notice. They're the favorite in the NFC. Stafford looks unbelievable. The boy wonder, Sean McVay, who we will forever regret losing.
He was your coach, right?
DC staff. Oh yeah, he was on our staff. Yep. And he looks like every bit is as good as people thought he was, now that he has a legit quarterback throwing the ball for him. So that was my takeaway, is that this is the Rams conference to lose at this point. Sorry, Milk.
So before we go on, there's still one game left in the NFL this week, and I'll just remain silent on this and get your guys' prediction on tonight's big game.
Pain. Are you sure you want our prediction?
My prediction is pain.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Eagles upset the Cowboys.
Eagles upset
the Cowboys. It's just my gut feeling. What's the line on that game? 4.5? Oh. No.
Let's see. I think it was like Cowboys minus 3.5. Yeah, it's Cowboys minus 3.5.
Look.
Yeah. I just, you're right. 3.5. I think the Cowboys are like in every other week, they're a good team.
Look, we've been loving the Chargers. Cowboys went to San Diego, right? Last week, won that game. I have no hope for you tonight, Halas. I'm sorry. Oh,
no hope.
I mean, I'm sorry. This is such a painful situation to be in. I mean, I really hate both these teams. Really hate them both. I mean, and I pray for a 0-0 tie. That would be the best outcome. Yes. Just a dreadful, terrible game where nobody can do anything. It ends up 0-0 and everybody feels awful about themselves the next day. And I got to say, House, you make it tough, but I really do hate the Cowboys more than the Eagles. You push me. You're pushing me there. But I think, I hate to say it, I think the Cowboys are going to steamroll the Eagles tonight.
Who's given up the least amount of points so far after three games in the NFL? Oh,
the least amount of points after three games. Is it the Browns?
It's the Eagles.
They've only played two.
I was going to say.
They've only played two. All right. But still,
yeah,
they've
we'll
only played
it.
Two games. Sure. They've only played two games. But in two games, they've given up 23 points. Their defense is playing pretty well.
I think it's a divisional game. I think it's not going to be a blowout. I think it's closer than you think, and I think it's a ball game in the fourth quarter.
Yep. It's going to be attractive.
I think the Cowboys will pull away.
There's really, really good receivers on the field tonight, and I think it's going to be a track meet. We'll see. I think it's going to be tough for us to pull this one off. We always seem to lose a close one in Dallas, so we'll see.
Dallas is
home. All right, House, give us the Plaxico locked up standings, and then let's go around the horn here.
Yeah. I have got great news for our listeners. We are not as feared 0-15. We are not 0-15. We now have real divisional standings.
In I was the sort bottom- of hoping we would be 0-15 still. I thought it would be more exciting.
At the bottom of the division are three teams tied at 0-3. Unfortunately, Bison, who took Washington +9, lost, moved to 0-3. Pope, who took the Chiefs -6.5, moved to 0-3. And House, who took the Raiders -3.5, it turned to 0-3. But we have first-time winners. Congrats to the leaders. Congrats to the leaders. I feel like you guys are like the first Americans winning the division at 7-9.
Killing it.
At 1-2, leading the division, we've got Rooster taking the Cardinals -7.5 and covering, and another huge spread covering at -7.5. Imagine taking the Panthers -7.5 and winning, but Milk did just that, and you guys are in the lead, which is why, as we turn to week 4, we are going to take our division winners to go first. Rooster, you are up.
All right. I know I should take the Chiefs over the Eagles, but I'm going to leave that one to you, House. You should take that. I'm going to stick at -7.5 and take the Titans over the Jets.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Wow. On the road.
Milk.
Okay. I really like this game. I know this is a homer pick, but you're not going to put Tom Brady back home, and it's not going to be a double-digit victory. Mac Jones, 3 picks. They look terrible on Sunday. The Bucs are pissed off after Sunday's loss. And Brady back in New England, 6.5? No. Lock of the week. Bucs by at least 10 to 14.
Wow. Okay. We're seeing a trend here that Milk has taken the Bucks 2 out of 4 weeks, Homer.
By the way, we'll have Antonio Brown back and probably a defensive guy.
All right. Before we go to you, Bison, we have a long distance dedication from Brian Pope on the south of France. Fancy Boy has got the Saints -8 this week against the Giants at home. Should be a layup for the Saints. Pope's got Saints -8 at home. Bison, what do you have?
I'm sorry to do it to your House, but I'm taking the Chiefs. I'm taking the Chiefs, giving the Eagles the beatdown. Chiefs giving 6.5. I'm taking the Chiefs in that one.
Yeah, I think that's probably going to be a good call in a short week coming back. But the Minnesota Vikings should be 3-0. They've lost 2 games by a combined total of 4 points at the very last minute of the game. They're a decent team, and I know the Browns are good and they have a good defense, but the Vikings are tough at home, and I think they win straight up. The Vikings are getting 1.5, and I'm going to take the Vikings in week 4 getting 1.5 at home from the Cleveland Browns. So there you have it. That is the Plaxico Burress locks of the week.
Wow. Right, so I'm that surprised nobody took the football team or the Bengals.
We've taken the football team now every single week and lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping we'd keep that streak alive.
All right. We're going to move on from football here. But before we do that, we got to check in with our foreign correspondent. House, you mentioned him. Let's hear from 1B Pope.
All right, here's my fucking report from deep in Frenchy country, where they are hanging their head low after getting their ass kicked by the USA in the Ryder Cup. Go boys. Great showing. Lots to think about between now and Italy for the Euros. I'm telling you, they're down and they got to figure it out. Great day here. You can see by my hat. Went to Monaco. Actually drove on the Monte Carlo Grand Prix race circuit. Did a couple laps around with our driver. Walked down the promenade where all the yachts are, went in the casino, took it all in. Great fucking day. And got this to say, Cowboys going to win tonight. Don't even think it's going to be close. And I think the Braves are going to hold off the Phils and take the National League East. That's my report. I don't have a fucking lasso. I don't want to punch anybody. Love you guys. See you soon. Bye.
You cannot get analysis like that anywhere that else. They are down and they got to figure it out.
They'll figure it out. He's had, all right, he's had a couple glasses of Chardonnay.
Yeah, let's baby.
Let's go right into a little Ryder Cup action with that. House, what do you got?
Well, listen, after all that doom and gloom report last week from Pope that we had no chance, we had picked the wrong course, we weren't a team, we didn't love each other, they were bringing in steel guys who had done this before. Holy crap, what a bitch slap in that Ryder Cup weekend. An absolute domination, record-setting, 19-9 win for the USA. Broke the record of 18.5 points in 1979. Way to go, Steve Stricker. What a captain. These young guns were insane. The rookies went 12-2-2. Captain's pick Scotty Scheffler took down the seemingly unbeatable John Rahm in singles 4-3. Colin Morikawa, another rookie, tied for his match. He's halved his match for us to clinch. He was incredible. In the end, pure talent beat out aged veterans. And if you take away Spain, there is no contest even at all. I really got to tip the hat to Dustin Johnson, our oldest player, age 37, went 5-0. And, you know, he's been a lot of pain from losing the major in the Whistling Straits. You'll remember when he wasn't sure whether or not it was a bunker and he rested his club in that famous major defeat. He absolutely was on fire. We obviously could have done it even without it, but DJ set the tone. He was unstoppable. It's time to put Ian Poulter out to pasture. Lee Westwood, Paul Casey, they're done. The USA was fantastic. The course was amazing. The spirit was amazing. And now the US has to turn it around and hope that in 2 years at the Marco Simone course in Rome, Italy, they can win the Ryder Cup on foreign soil for the first time in 30 years. They haven't done it in 1993.
Is it 2 years or 1 year?
It's going to be in 2023 now, in 2 years. Back to 2 years, Italy in 23, and then Bethpage Black, imagine that zoo, right outside of New York, 2025. But for now, we celebrate. The Ryder Cup is ours. And this team, as Steve Stricker said, I kind of agree with him. This is the greatest Ryder Cup team of all time.
Yep. I think you missed the biggest accomplishment of that team, though. This team and the performance got Brooksy and Bryson to hug it out at the end, which might be the biggest accomplishment of the weekend.
I'm gonna just tell you right now, that is both my Ted Lasso and punchable face moment. I wish they had hugged it out and then one of them took a step back and slugged the other one right in the face.
Yes.
Would have been awesome. Because that was just a little too much.
Anybody?
Hey, how about Tony Finau, too? Tony Finau.
Yeah.
Great. I was so happy for Finau and Morikawa. I love those two guys. I think this is going to just launch their career up to a whole nother level, both of them.
I really like that moment with Stricker, his interview. I mean, that emotion and him starting to cry, you know, when they asked him about where he said it was his major. He said, I'd never had a major and this was my major. Really emotional moment. All the players were hugging him. I mean, that was just really, really, we really came together and I didn't think we would. I thought there was a lot of issues and they just looked so much better. I mean, it wasn't even close. Just a really powerful performance.
And missing from that audio clip of Pope was his apology to the Ryder Cup team. I mean, he pretty much buried those guys a week ago. And I would have thought that he'd be a bigger man than that and probably issue an apology on the pod. Maybe next week. I don't know.
Who got more hammered last night, Pope or Dustin Johnson?
Oh, I'm going to give Dustin Johnson the nod there. That was a great interview that you sent. They asked Dustin Johnson, "You're the old guy. Do you think you can keep up with these guys partying?" What did he say, Milk? Abso-fucking-lutely.
And all those younger guys were like, "I'm not messing with him. Are you kidding me?"
Yeah, that's God, right. They want no part happen. Of that. They run into a buzzsaw. Forget that. All right.
Oh, yes. Well,
congrats to the USA. Great job on the Ryder Cup. It was definitely a great environment, too. Watching it on TV was a lot of fun because the crowd was so into it. It was great. So, Milk, give us a quick college football update.
Well, actually, I was just going to address something with you on this, Nace, because let's see here. I think 3 weeks ago in our preview, 3 or 4 weeks ago in our preview podcast, you were demolishing college football as being completely boring and predictable.
Yes.
Let's see here. Clemson is about to be unranked. Ohio State is gone. Both their seasons are over. Right now we've got Bama and Georgia at the top. I get that. We have Oregon at number 3, Penn State and Iowa at 4 and 5, Cincinnati at 8. This is a transitional season in college football. It's really exciting if you're not watching it. And I would say if you're going to watch one football game all season in college football, it is this Saturday, Ole Miss, Alabama. They might put up 6,000 points, literally. That's going to be an unbelievable environment. And if Bama goes down there, I mean, geez, we might have – it's really going to get interesting. But it's crazy. No one predicted any of this.
If Bama goes down there, I will say college football is interesting.
And they might go down. If they weren't at home, I would say the really good chance. But look, I think this is really – this is an interesting season. You've got Arkansas in the top 10 taking out A&M. I mean, a lot of teams you just don't see. And I just want to see how it plays out. I think we can have some, you know, if Penn State keeps playing the way they're playing, they're going to make the playoff.
I wish that I could have a college football lock of the week instead, because I would absolutely take Ole Miss getting 14.5 at Alabama.
I love it. I love that pick.
What is Notre Dame ranked after the pace thing they put on?
They're ranked in the top 10. They're 10.
Well, that was impressive though.
Yeah,
that was Notre Dame's best.
Sorry for all you Notre Dame haters out there. Do you have to bring it up? But they're looking good.
Sucks. They're unranked.
They almost lost to Florida State, who's 0-4. Just get them out of there.
They suck.
Was there any chance Milk wasn't getting through this podcast without saying Florida State was 0-4?
I had to bring them in there. Is everyone aware of this? 0-4. They may not win one game. They're going to win one game all year.
Notre Dame is going to get pasted this weekend by Cincinnati, just by the way.
That's going to be interesting.
Cincinnati's
out for blood against Brian Kelly.
Hey, Oregon, Penn State, Iowa, those are shockers right now. I mean, Penn State, maybe not that much, but watch out. This is going to get very interesting.
Well, let's see. Prove me wrong, college football. Prove me wrong. All right. Going on to something else that's heating up and that's is always interesting and exciting, Major League Baseball. We are down the home stretch here. The postseason races are on fire. We will at least acknowledge that the Rays have clinched the AL East.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congrats, Milk.
Did we win something else?
Cheaters.
Let's see what you can do with it. The Yankees. Rooster, big series. Fuego. Big series, huh?
Just swept the Sox to take over the wild card position. The Yankees are looking good. They're 89-67, and they and the Red Sox are fighting it out for the two wild card spots. I think the Yankees are in the driver's seat.
Toronto's still there.
I like it. Toronto's still there, but they're two games back in the loss column. And they have a pretty tough. The Mariners and the A's are technically still in it for the wild card, but I think it's down to the Yankees and the Red Sox. which would be really exciting. And
so aren't the Yankees at Toronto now? Aren't the Yankees at Toronto right now?
Yeah, I think so. But here's what's going on with the Yankees. Stanton is back in a groove and hitting bombs almost every night. And Judge is also hitting. And when those two guys are hitting at the same time, that's a powerful, powerful lineup. And it hadn't happened much in the last 2 years. But right now
they haven't been healthy.
Yeah.
They haven't both been healthy at the same time.
Right now they're both on. The Yankees are getting pretty decent spot pitching from a bunch of no-name starters or has-been starters. And Cole is now starting to pitch really well again. And they got Severino back off the injured reserve list. And he's pitching really well in relief. So if Chapman can keep his stuff under control, I think the Yankees are going to be dangerous in the playoffs.
Well, I'd like to see Toronto get into the playoffs, but – it's hard not to root for a Yankees Red Sox one game,
right. one game, right?
I mean that's pretty special when you get that. So
Boston has six at the Orioles and then at the Nationals, while the Yankees and Blue Jays beat each other's brains out. I mean, Boston at least has a scheduling advantage right now.
Yeah, they do.
They're playing
the
Orioles six times.
No, at the Orioles, three. Then at the Expos.
Three.
Yeah. How about we've talked about you have to win 90 games. How about this? The Dodgers have won 100 games and maybe a wild card team. That division is strong.
And by the way, is there anyone you don't want to play than the Cardinals?
How about the St. Louis Cardinals?
Right.
We owe a little mea culpa to Tad Thomas, a longtime listener who took us to task for jumping over the Cardinals a week ago. They were in the midst of the streak. But what we were really doing, Tad, was we knew they were going to get to 16 in a row. So we just thought we'd wait a week until they were at that 16 number. It wasn't that we were overlooking it. We just knew they had a bunch more coming.
It really hurts after winning 16 in a row, and then you get into the one game playoff, and then you shit the bed.
Well, then you have to play the Dodgers. Like, congrats! Now you get to play LA.
You mean with the Reds? One game playoff with the Reds.
Good luck to Tad. Good luck to Tad Thomas and the St. Louis Cardinals.
And on that point, though, I mean, you know, you're right that the Giants, who have been the best team in baseball all season, record wise, you know, they're only two in front of the Dodgers. They could end up in that wild card spot and lose one game and go home after having the best record.
Yeah, but the Dodgers play the Padres and the Brewers from here on out. That's a tough schedule.
That's a tough schedule.
The Giants play the Padres and the Diamondbacks, so they should have the advantage.
Well, this could be fun. These are some close races, and there's some intriguing matchups in there. So definitely keep an eye on Major League Baseball. But I'm going to throw another thing in here that I want to talk about for Major League Baseball before we get into the postseason. And I'm going to be taken to task for being a homer on this, but that's okay. I'm going to do it. If you're not paying attention to what Juan Soto is doing right now as a hitter. Well, this is serious, though. This is historic what this kid is doing right now. Let's start off with the fact that he's 22 years old. I mean, he is a baby. And I want to read a stat to you. This is a couple days old now. But Soto has taken 131 walks and struck out only 84 times. So here's a list of batters who have finished the season with at least 130 walks and fewer than 100 strikeouts. Babe Ruth in his age 25 season, Ted Williams in his age 22 season, Mickey Mantle, 25, Ted Williams, 23, Juan Soto right now, 22, and Eddie Yost at 23. That's it. That's the entire list. What Soto is doing with the mastery of the strike zone that he has really is unprecedented at this stage of the game. He is probably the most gifted hitter we've seen maybe going back to Miggy, I guess, is probably the last person who comes to mind as being just such a pure hitter. And, you know, it's he's Tony on a terrible
Gwynn.
Team.
What about Tony Gwynn?
Well, yeah, that's going back even longer. But, yeah, sure, that's a good comparison. I mean, right now, from a statistical standpoint, he is right on pace with Ted Williams, who many say is the greatest pure hitter to ever play the game. So, you know, he's on a terrible team. He's not going to be in the postseason. And there's certainly other great young players in the game. But really what Soto is doing right now is historic. So I just want to
speaking about that division in which there's not a single team that has a chance of winning 90 games. House, who do you think is going to come out on top, Braves or the Phillies?
Well, I think it's too tall of an order right now. I mean, we got it down to a game and a half, and then Saturday night, the Phillies had a shot to get it down to a half a game. The Padres were up 8-7 in the ninth, and the closer, the best closer in baseball, Mark Melancon, had two outs and couldn't hold a save, and that changed really the entire end of the season. Now the Phillies are coming into Atlanta, down 2.5. We basically have to sweep there and then hold off with the Marlins.
But you play the Marlins. The Braves play the Mets after your series.
Well, the Mets suck too.
I'd much rather play the Marlins.
The Mets suck too, and the Mets are going to be ready for the golf course.
The Mets are going to play the Braves tough, though, I think.
Okay, but Rooster, if we let's say we take 2 out of 3, we're still leaving there down 1.5. And that means we have to sweep the Marlins and the Mets have to win twice. I mean, it's just the Braves would have to go 1-3 in each of the next series. And I don't see it happening, but we'll see. We have to be on fire. There's going to be some good pitching matchups down in Atlanta. Our bullpen was historically bad. We've blown more than 30 saves this year. We broke a record in Major League Baseball with giving up 32 out home runs. 32 count home runs. It's just we have a bad bullpen and too little. I listen, Soto. I just want to say this about Soto. He's very, very. It's very, very. It's a lot of talent at age 22, and he deserves a lot of accolades. But I think it's a little blown out of proportion. It's one half of the season. He's a great young player. I don't think we should enshrine him in the hall yet, but would I want to start a new baseball team with Juan Soto? Absolutely. That's for sure.
I'm going to leave it at that.
All right.
Hold on real quick. I just got a text message from one of our longtime listeners in Atlanta. He wanted me to tell House it's my ass. His name's Brandon Smith. Do you know him?
I'm sorry, Cricket Wireless interrupted.
Yeah. Take your head out of the garbage can and say that again.
Yeah.
One of our longtime listeners in Atlanta, who's listening to the show live right now, texted me and said he wanted me to tell House in preparation of this series this week to kiss his ass.
Mm.
And that's right, it. Well, that was the text.
Well, that seems like a good segue into House. Who's your punchable face of the week?
It's this week's punchable face.
Well, we are gonna stay with baseball, and somebody on our SMQBs might not be very happy about this punchable face of the week.
Oh, but
this
boy.
This past Monday night, there was a baseball game that was played. In the sixth inning, a catcher named Alejandro Kirk got a rocket throw to home plate and tagged out one Kevin Kiermaier of the Tampa Rays plate in the sixth inning.
Yeah. Yeah.
At the time that happened, there was a collision of sorts in the play. Kiermaier was out, and out of Kirk's pants fell what's called a pitching plan card. It's a little laminated index card. Tells him how the pitcher should throw to guys, some strategy, communication between pitcher and catcher. It's a little bit of a cheat sheet, but let me underscore, it's a secret that belongs to the Rays. Belongs to the Blue Jays. It doesn't belong up on the scoreboard for the Rays. So what happens? Kiermaier picks it up, and takes it to the dugout. And you might think, all right, maybe Kiermaier doesn't exactly know right away. He takes it with him to the dugout. The Blue Jays say, yo, we're missing the pitching plan card. Bat boy, go over to the dugout and go get the card back from the Rays dugout. They send over the bat boy and they tell the bat boy, scram, get lost. We're keeping the thing. Well, maybe we don't have to do a punchable face, because the next night when Tampa Bay was up 7-1, they got beamed by the Blue Jays and some benches cleared a little bit. But what a piece of shit move. I mean, the Rays are already running away with the division. They've got plenty of talent. You know, they don't need this little cheat sheet from the Blue Jays. Either win on talent or don't play the game. Milk, that was just a BS move. And Bush League and Kevin Kiermaier and the Rays deserve this week's punch in the face.
Bam.
This is ridiculous.
Cheaters.
Cheaters.
Hey, you drop something on the not your home turf on your away field, and sorry, it's ours now.
I mean,
finders, keepers, losers, weepers. All right.
Oh, my God.
It is rare that I agree with House on anything sports related, but I am 100% with you on this. And I think, though, this is
not like he dropped it either. Got knocked out of him in a collision.
What is he supposed to do? Hand it back?
Or just leave it there. Just leave it there.
This is where baseball, the unwritten rules. But this is where the unwritten rules do come into play, right? Like, this is exactly why guys get beamed. And I'm okay with that. I mean, really, I am okay with that in this situation.
He got what was coming to him. And trust me, by the way, 364 days out of the year, I will punch Kevin Kiermaier in the face. You know, how I feel about him. On this issue, I'm saying no. It's fine.
Cheaters.
What he did. I wouldn't give a shit if that happened in Toronto or wherever.
Yeah, you would.
But I'm okay. But secretly, I'm kind of okay with you punching.
So if Bill Belichick decides to steal the playbook from the Bucks this weekend, you're okay with it?
No, I'm not okay. That's different.
Oh, okay.
Hey, just checking. Was I really upset when they threw at his head? Nah.
All right. Anybody else have a punchable face? No. Okay. Let's do a lasso, because I got a good one, and I like this. And this one comes from the pitch over the pond, so it's actually really a close Ted Lasso. But you know, with any lasso, a lot of times you do have some punchable face candidates as well. So I'm going to try and set this up right. A 13-year-old kid who has cerebral palsy put on a video online or something of him playing a soccer football match as goalie. And because the world is just dark and evil and it has some horrid people in it, they attacked him and found him and made him as sort of a punching bag online. I guess people do this to make themselves feel better, pick on a kid who has cerebral palsy online and really abused him. And it's really, really just horrible. There's just a warm place in hell for people who decide that that's what they're going to do. But let's enter the heroes, because that's who we want to focus on here. And that goes to House, you're going to have to tell me if I say this wrong, but the Fulham team. The Fulham team saw this somehow. And this kid, Reese Porter, is a Fulham fan. And the team rallied around him all week. One of the players showed up and gave him a ball before the game. And then they invited him to come to the game against Bristol City on Saturday. And they made him an honorary member of the team. And when they scored a goal, the whole team went running over and jumped in the stands with this kid and gave him a hug. And they all high-fived him. And if you haven't seen the video, you should find it, because it really is sort of the definition of what we think is a Ted Lasso moment, of a good moment in sports, where this whole team, I mean, you know, look, let's be honest, these teams, these are young kids playing, right? I mean, they're young men, they're adults, but they're young. And so to me, when you see a team or a player, a young person like that go out of his or her way to make someone else feel special, they're not grown up adults yet, right? And so it's particularly heartwarming to see like a young person, and in this case, a whole team, know that they could make a difference. And it was really, you know, it wasn't meant to be an FU to the people online who harassed this kid, but it's not meant that way, but in some ways it is. But more importantly, it's just such a lift up for Reese Porter. And really, that's the power of sports, I think. And that should be celebrated.
Hear, hear.
It's a great one. Here's to Reese Porter.
Yeah. You guys know that I've done a lot of work with kids with special needs and coached Special Olympics. Yep. And for the most part, I can tell you that these kids don't have any cynicism in them. And so when that Reese had that moment, he wasn't thinking, oh, these guys just feel sorry for me. He was experiencing pure joy and will take that with him for the rest of his life. He's going to remember that for a long, long time. And it was just Amazing. Really a beautiful moment.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good one.
Good job, team. All right, guys.
Good deal.
Hey, let's say happy 55th birthday to Brian Pope.
Yes.
Happy double nickel, big man.
Happy birthday, miss you, Pope.
We hope you're having a great time in Monaco, Mr. Fancy Pants. Yeah.
Happy 55th. And I will tell you guys right now, no need to search for a punchable face of the week next week if Miles Sanders does not get 6 points tonight in fantasy football.